This rip was brought to you by good friends at CoinKite. CoinKite's here. They build the best Bitcoin hardware in the space. I'm rubbing my block clock right now. Have you ever rubbed your block clock, Logan?
No, I'm not weird.
Yeah, it doesn't feel great. It's not a rubbing product. It's a looking product. You look at it, it gives you great stats on the Bitcoin network. You set it up. It's a beautiful, aesthetically pleasing piece of hardware. Keeps you updated on what's going on in Bitcoin. That's just one thing. That's just like the fun things that CoinKite makes. They're very fun. They're very cool. They also make the best security hardware in the Bitcoin space. Their wallets, the MK4 and the Q1, both come with two secure elements. Both are NFC enabled. Both allow you to create private public key pairs offline in an air gap fashion. So your private keys never touch the internet. You can add entropy to your private key with dice rolls as well with both products. A bit different. MK4 looks like a little calculator. The Q1 is a full keyboard device with a bigger screen, QR scanning capabilities, and it has a battery pack as well. Again, the most secure hardware on the market, allows you to create your private public keys in an air gap fashion. It's the best way to do it. Adding entropy to it as well. Eliminate single points of failure. Cold card helps you do that with their hardware by keeping your stuff offline. They also have the Sats card, the Tap Signer, the Sats chip, a bunch of things. Go check it out at CoinKite.com. Try RHR. Just try it. Tell me what happens. Nobody's told us, Logan. Have you tried it?
I have not. Have you tried it?
I have not. Maybe it's on me. Maybe I should go try it. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. We talk about them in this episode. They're doing it the right way. They're a financial institution of the future, building their whole company off of Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. They have their Vault product, which is a 2 or 3 multi-sig in which you hold two keys. Unchained holds one. Since you have those two keys, you control your Bitcoin. You can move it whenever you see fit. If you're ever in a pinch and need Unchained to be the second in the 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum, the second signature, they're there for you. They have the trading desk where if you buy Bitcoin through their trading desk, it goes straight to that vault that you set up. So there's no pulling out keys, wallets, addresses. You buy Bitcoin, it goes straight to your multi-sig cold storage vault. Single points of failure are eliminated in that model. Unchained never holds the Bitcoin. You don't buy it on Unchained, it sits on exchange. No, you buy it, goes straight to your multi-sig cold storage. Whether you're an individual, high net worth individual, a family office, an institution, a sovereign wealth fund looking to buy Bitcoin, hit up Unchained's trading desk. Go to unchained.com/trading to check it out and enjoy this rip of Rabbit Hole Recap. Okay.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
It's so weird that he doesn't like Noster. He owes me a million sats, though, because he has an account.
He's very angry at you, Rockstar. Parker is hyper-focused on the circular economy, which he thought was a meme a couple years ago, so who knows? Just a couple years, it'll be a Noster bowl as well.
I mean, this Noster circular economy is super interesting to me. Like, I looked up my total amount of zaps I've sent, and it was insane. I was like, I'm never going to check this again. It really adds up really quickly. You're like, oh, 5,000 payments later. Oh, holy shit.
I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, do you think Zap fatigue creeps in?
Where Zap fatigue is not a thing.
Where it's like a novelty and people are doing it more, and then they're like, oh shit, I'm spending millions of sats. Like,
raise your hand if you sent a Zap today. But this is not like this is selection bias, but still. I get to the point where if I try and send someone Bitcoin on Noster and it fails and it doesn't work, it bothers me. Like, I get angry they don't take my money.
Why don't they have Zaps enabled?
Do they even care? Why'd they troll my post if they weren't going to get zapped for it? Are we ready? We're recording? Awesome. What is up,
Bitcoin Park? What is up, freaks?
Raise your hand if you've listened to Rabbit Hole Recap before. Okay, awesome. So there's about Rabbit Hole Recap is a podcast me and Marty do every week for the last 5 years. We've never skipped a week, which is insane, to talk about what happened this week, which is kind of self-explanatory. But for these live shows, when we do these live audience shows, we tend to switch it up. We bring people up from the audience. We move away from our regular news list, and we just have a good time. So fortunately, we are up here with CK from HRF. How's it going, CK?
It's going good. Happy to be here.
And we have Thunder Biscuit here, BDK contributor. Lead maintainer of Padawan Wallet?
Lead maintainer.
Thunder Biscuit's up here because Matt gave improper attribution to the Padawan Wallet last week.
So what is the Padawan Wallet?
Yeah, you want to start with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Padawan Wallet is a wallet that I maintain. It's unfortunately, it's only available on Android. I'm looking for contributors. If you're listening to this, you like the wallet, you'd like to see an iOS version, reach out. But Padawan Wallet is a came out of an idea I had a few years ago where I wanted to give a wallet to someone that would be able to send them testnet Satoshis right out of the gate, and released the latest version a few weeks ago. The project just turned 3 years old, and it's now fully working. So,
fuck yeah.
Yeah, check it out. It's got clean UI.
How do we check it out?
You can download it right on the Play Store for the Android.
Just search Padawan.
Yeah, Padawan Wallet. So if you're not a Star Wars fan, Padawan is the idea of somebody who's in the learning process. So Padawan comes with a series of tutorials that aim to make you a proficient Bitcoiner at the wallet level. So I'm not, there's no politics, there's no monetary policy or anything like that. I'm trying to make your mom or your young nephew sort of like comfortable with using a Bitcoin wallet. I think of it as a weekend study. So you can download it on a Friday night. You and your girlfriend download it. And if you work on it over the weekend, by Sunday night, you can delete it. And you have learned what you needed to learn from it. But by then, you're ready to download Blockstream Green or Mutiny or other big Bitcoin wallets.
I think there's some cool overlap because obviously we're here at the park this week to talk about Noster, but we just had a Noster onboarding conversation. And to me, maybe it's just because of our bias of just being Bitcoiners for such a long time, but like a lot of the experiences I've had in Bitcoin education, dictates kind of how I view like where Noster goes next. And what I've noticed is that people learn much better when they have like an app interface in front of them. It's not, you know, a YouTube video, it's not a book or something like that. So this idea of Padawan Wallet, which is very unique in Bitcoin, even, you know, what, 13 years, 14 years after the creation of Bitcoin, like maybe there is something there for Noster, right? Where it's like a specific client that's designed to be like your learning client. And then you like graduate out of it.
Well, this is something I was thinking about earlier too, during that panel, is maybe like a client with ephemeral keys where you're doing things that really don't dictate that you keep the history of what you're doing. I don't know if that makes sense, but
I'd be down for that. Certainly. Yeah. Give me a wallet. Give me a client that will have keys for me for a week and auto deletes at the end of it. I want that.
Yeah.
I'll try a bunch of stuff. Maybe testnet zaps, auto load your wallet. That's what Padawan does. There's a button. I send you testnet coins. They look and they behave just like any other Bitcoin on Earth. You can check on mempool.space. You'll see them. They have fee structures. You know, the market, sometimes you have to RBF a transaction, except that you're testnet. So if you lose your wallet, it doesn't matter. And so you get to learn it and you get to ask questions. My experience with Bitcoin, at least for people that I, you know, around me, it doesn't really work from the top down approach where like, this is why it's important, blah, 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 blah. It works from like, what's this QR code? And then you scan it and then it goes. And this is a, you've all seen it in the eyes of other people, but it's this magical moment that they will never forget, right? Like when you scan a QR code from someone else and it just like the sats just go in.
For Marty, the magical moment was seed recovery.
For Bitcoin, yeah. I was telling the story yesterday, but in 2016, my cousin got married in St. John in the Caribbean, and it turns out it's very expensive down there. And I flew down there and ran out of money rather quickly as a 25-year-old in St. John, and I luckily had a journal on me that had a seed phrase in it, and asked my dad to download Electrum wallet and recovered from seed for the first time, had money, and at the time was using Coinbase, sent the coins to Coinbase, and then back then Coinbase had a debit card that you could use and was able to get access to cash. I was like, holy shit, I just used these 12 words to get access to a few hundred dollars. But I do have a question for Padawan. Is it true what they say, testnet Bitcoin is scarcer than actual Bitcoin?
It's funny, but it's kind of true. No. People think testnet coins have no value, and they really don't, because in theory you could like reset testnet at any time and your coins are all lost, but actually they're really, really hard to acquire because people don't care about them. So we keep losing them and we don't, we don't take care of them. It's baked right into my app. Like when you're done with them, there's like, you know, a page that says, please send the coins back to the project because I'm giving them out for free. Like, but in theory, a lot of people purchase them. If you're looking for a good amount of testnet coins right now, you might very well have to purchase them
or to mine them yourself. Don't purchase testnet coins. Just use mainnet.
Reach out. Yeah.
Can we have a Padawan wallet with mainnet? I don't use testnet.
You don't use testnet. Well, that's what I thought was so sad is testnet is not really used. How many people do you know have made their first multi-sig on mainnet? That's real. Like people do that. Like,
I only test on mainnet. Okay.
Well, Balls of steel.
I always thought it was weird that Tencent wasn't really accessible to people who are new to Bitcoin. It was really only accessible to developers for a long time.
I think
time.
It should be the first thing you learn about. It's like, oh, try it on testnet. Your kids should try everything on testnet. It's very hard for kids to get access to coins. That's the other thing. If you're 14 years old and your dad or your mom is not into Bitcoin, how are you going to get coins? You'll never be able to test that. Noster, maybe.
Actually, a lot of people are going to get their first Bitcoin on Noster.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure of that. I think this event and the fact that we're having Rabbit Hole Recap is really interesting because Rabbit Hole Recap is obviously a Bitcoin first show. It was always Bitcoin show. But like it's quickly morphed into like also a Noster show. Yeah. We cover so much in Noster, and I think their futures are so intertwined at this point. And it's hard for me to like imagine a path forward without both of them together.
No, I mean, this is something we talked about yesterday at the 1031 event, and something that I truly believe is that when you talk to people in crypto, and they, particularly with the Web 3.0 meme, where it's like we have a blockchain for everything, if you're a content creator, music creator, just come on this particular chain and you'll get paid in music coin, whatever the hell it is. And I truly believe that Bitcoin, I hate the Web3 meme and the name, but like the end functionality that these people envision being brought to market is simply combining open source money, an open source protocol for money with Bitcoin with other open source protocols like Noster, and they're completely symbiotic. Like I don't think Noster would have the potential to be as successful as it does without Bitcoin being baked in at every level to create this incentive structure to monetize and actually produce content.
I have a question. Should we consider Noster like a layer on Bitcoin, or is it its own thing?
It's its own thing.
It's definitely not a Bitcoin layer. It's an interoperable communication protocol. I actually think there's something to be said about what Square, now Block, tried to meme into reality about like Web5. They like shot the gun too early because they wanted it with DIDs and TBD and all that stuff. But there's something there in terms of narrative because a lot of people do believe in like the Web3 meme. But I also think that most of that is just bullshit and doesn't really matter in long term things. And like the way I view it is like right now, Bitcoiners bootstrap Noster. And then at some point there's going to be like a critical mass where Noster is going to overtake Bitcoin in the adoption cycle. And then Noster is going to bootstrap Bitcoin. And there'll be millions, billions of people that get their first Bitcoin through, just logging into Noster and getting a zap for the first time. Because it's way less like this idea of going out and like, first of all, trying to understand what money is and like this paradigm shift of how money works and like what money should be for you, and then go out and either earn it or buy it and actually put your hard money to do that is way, way higher lift than just posting a shit post and getting 42 sats for it. So I think like that, and there's like some overlap there with gaming, where it's like this low lift way of earning sats.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's, I mean, and I said this earlier when we did the intros this morning, but the social media stuff, it's incredible. And the incentivization to produce good content to get zapped is awesome. But like beyond that, the messaging protocol being used for things like data vending machines or a protocol to pass along PSBTs or
Mutiny wallet, how it just turns into Venmo as soon as you add an MPUB is crazy.
Yeah.
Like with the contact list and stuff. Like to me, that's where it really starts to hit you how powerful that could be. Is when you put your MPUB into Mutiny. Because they also made it pretty.
And it works. It's funny. Tony, I don't know if he's in here right now, but he was demoing it yesterday and people were zapping him as he's demoing it, and it's just showing up on Mutiny wallet.
He's a hard man to miss. I don't think he's in the room. Shame.
Shame.
Marty, we're about 10 minutes into the show, and I was just curious if you've looked at mempool.space at all today.
It's a leading question because you know I looked at mempool.space today. You saw me.
I walked into the 1031 office upstairs, and Marty was just on mempool.space, like on his computer sitting at the table. There was no other tabs open. It was just mempool.space.
Well, staring into the distance.
What is going on right now? What are the Ordinals people doing? What are they minting something? What is it?
I mean, I don't think you can just blame it on the Ordinals stuff.
They're taking credit for it.
Yeah, I mean, they want you to give them credit for it. I think it's a mix of like the bull froth and the Ordinals stuff, right? Like as bull markets start to, as the bull begins its run, people use Bitcoin more. They make more Bitcoin transactions. And you also start to feel like fee FOMO to a degree. So I think it's a combination of the two. But yeah, the Ordinals guys are doing something with like an Ordi token or something like that.
Hand raised in the back there.
57% of Bitcoin block space over the last 24 hours has been Ordinals. But that leaves 43% that weren't. Some nice, good RHR math. But yeah, I think, look, at the end of the day, regardless of how you feel about Ordinals, they're fee-paying transactions, right? And you can't stop people from sending Bitcoin transactions. And if you're truly bullish on Bitcoin, you operate under the principle that at some point mempools will never clear again. And I think we're watching that play out.
I think we get one more clear between now and Christmas Eve.
Yeah, to those who are not aware, me and Marty made a bet on mempools clearing, and we made the terms Christmas Eve because no one transacts on Christmas Day. So I covered my ass a little bit on that.
It's double or nothing for nothing for me. I won a bet earlier this year.
You haven't won anything because nothing's settled yet. Yeah, and I'm going to send it on chain if you do win. I think the best case scenario would be if we just had a momentary clear on Christmas Day. Then I get to hold the bet over your head. I get to clear some of my own transactions. Like I don't want to pay high transaction fees and then still grandstand because mempools fill up after that.
Best case scenario for you, worst case scenario for me. No, but like diving into this.
Funny how that works.
It was all mempool.space and insights.brains.com. Just looking at the mining economics, hash price is up above like 9.5 cents, approaching 10 cents rather quickly. Daily mining revenues approaching like $45 million. It was at like $28 million a couple months ago. So miners are certainly liking this right now. And then another interesting stat, we don't have Clark's dashboard out, which he typically goes through, but I looked at it. We're probably like 440 blocks away from the next difficulty adjustment. It's only estimated to be a 2% upwards adjustment right now, which I thought was pretty surprising considering how much the price has pumped over the last 2 weeks and all this fee revenue that's out there.
So Marty, is the bull market upon us or are you still bearish?
I'm going to reverse jinx. This is a bull trap. We're going back to 25. No, I don't know.
That's.
I'm going to make you be the bullish one.
What?
I'm going to make you.
Dude, I am so fucking bullish. there's a good chance that a handful of ETFs will all get approved in the next 8 days or 9 days.
Yes.
Definitely not priced in. If the ETFs get launched, there's 45 days before they actually can be traded. So we have a nice 45 days of front running BlackRock and all the other suits into the halving. None of this is priced in.
Agreed.
I'm feeling, I think the bull is here. I think the bull is here. We might have like a nice humble drop to 32 or something, but it doesn't fucking matter. And just stay on the stack sets and get ready to shitpost like crazy on Noster. It's going to be fucking lit.
Well, it's funny, like observing Twitter and talking to people, there's, oh, I mean, people are like, all right, maybe this is 2019. This is the 2019 bull trap that we had at the summer when we actually, our first live second live episode we did at Bitcoin 2020 or 2019. And Matt told everybody to smash buy Bitcoin at the tip top of that bull trap.
Hey, Marty, what was the top?
Like 14K.
It was like 13K. Yeah. It was a great decision. But yeah, for 2.5 years after that, I literally told everyone to take out your phones, buy Bitcoin, and then we went down for 2.5 years. We didn't cross back ahead of 13K. So yes, I'm well aware that I'm bullish at every top. I am actually very talented. I can buy every bottom and every top.
Always bullish.
I have a great strategy.
The point I'm trying to make, though, is like that's like people are like, are we in the 2019 bull trap scenario? Another thing too, like we were talking about this earlier, like it's pretty fascinating how it's mirroring what happened in 2019 and 2020, where 2019 you had
you're gonna get wrecked
the repo spasm in the fall of 2019, and then obviously 2020 we had COVID lockdowns and stimulus and the price dumped to 3,500. It seems like the macro setup is obviously not exactly the same, but kind of similar from the banking perspective and the economic perspective. But yeah, like there is that,
Marty, the difference between 2019 is that you were also incredibly bullish and everyone in the audience was incredibly bullish. As long as Marty's up here saying it's a bull trap, we're going to the moon. Like that is the fundamental analysis there.
I mean, that's why I preface this with I'm going to try to reverse jinx it because I am actually really
bullish.
You
can't bullish. If you say it like, out loud. No, this is like the bullshit Marty cop-out you've been doing for the last 5 years.
No,
you got to pick a side, Marty.
I mean, 200K by conference day.
200K by conference day. Still in play. Which conference? There's too many now.
There's only one.
Bitcoin.
Okay, so we're bullish. Everyone, how do you feel about the price, Thunder Biscuit? Are you ready to pump it into your veins? Are we ready? Or
I'm trying to stay zen about it. My sats.
CK, on the record, bullish or bearish?
No one is bullish enough.
Yes. No one is bullish enough.
No, that being like trying to stay zen, that's something hopefully 15 years in the industry, like the people literally building products have learned by now. Like if you're running a company.
No shot in hell.
I know. Absolutely. But if you're running a company now, like if you're a leader at a company, you have to be prepping your team. Like things are going to get crazy. There's going to be like $5,000 green candles that come out of nowhere. Your adrenaline's going to be pumping, but you need to fucking get some work done. Like that's.
Here's one thing I think. It's useful if you can have two personalities with your Bitcoin friends. You can be bullish as you want, but it's useful for people who don't know as much about Bitcoin to see you being zen even in a bull run. I feel like that's something I didn't do initially where like I was too bullish around people that were not into Bitcoin. And now people that look at me, they're like, wow, this guy, what, he doesn't care about price? And I just fake it. I totally fake that I don't care about price, but they see me in this complete zen mode in the middle of this huge ramp up, and I don't care.
Thunder, last cycle, my dad's friends were asking him if his son was okay because he was only tweeting in caps.
You need to get him a new computer. I thought Bitcoin was pumping. Why is his cap lock broken?
But yeah, that's good advice. I'm not going to practice it, though.
I practice it. I like it. Yeah, I do that. I feel like I just don't even talk to people about Bitcoin. If they're not into Bitcoin, I either make the evaluation if I'm buying sats for them or not. And then I don't think about it.
Like, what, you decide, like, if you're going to take in them and their family?
Sure, I mean, like, hey, like, you know, if it's my uncle, I'm not going to convince him to buy Bitcoin. I'm just like, all right, well, fuck, I'll buy some sats for you, whatever.
No, that's the, that's, like, the internal battle, yeah. I'm like, I've reached a point to where I'm like, all right, you guys know I'm the Bitcoin guy. If you want to know, come to me. But I can also feel like if we pump, they're going to be like, why didn't you tell me to get in? I'm like, I did. Like, you should have told me harder. That's going to... Like, I was talking with a high school friend today over text. We had a completely normal conversation. I felt the urge to just end the conversation with buy Bitcoin. So, yes, I am bullish, even though I'm trying to reverse jinx this.
Jinx.
So what else do we want to talk about? Do we think the ETFs are going to get approved this week? I mean, it's just, didn't like the two ETF nerds say like 90% chance?
Yeah, I bet they get approved.
Like,
I
mean, Balkanis, Eric Balkanis, and who's the other guy?
Jeff Seifert.
Yeah.
But as we know, I mean, somebody knows behind the scenes. Somebody's going to know behind the scenes when things are going to happen, and that information is going to leak. And,
well, maybe it already has. That's why we're pumping.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at. Like,
I heard BlackRock was already like filling, like the, they're buying Bitcoin for, yeah, pre-buying Bitcoin for their ETF.
I saw a tweet about that too. I don't know, speculation. Because you think about it, like everybody's like, oh, BlackRock's buying up all the Bitcoin cheap. But that's not how it works. Their clients go to buy Bitcoin. I'm sorry. Their clients say, hey, I want you to buy Bitcoin for me. They have to go buy it at market. They're not like building. I don't think that's how it works.
Well, no, they could. I mean, they can front run themselves, though, right?
Build up a treasury and sell from their treasury.
Or just to speculate on the price of Bitcoin, like assume that the price of Bitcoin is going to go up when there's ETFs and whatnot.
I don't know.
Like, do you think Larry has a big ass bag that he's just been filling up?
I mean, Larry individually, but BlackRock's publicly traded, right? Yeah, so they'd have to.
But what's the difference? Like, how big is Larry's bag?
Like, you know, they're buying Bitcoin.
Is Larry buying all the coins right now?
Wouldn't be surprised. But they'd have to disclose that they're buying as a company.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you can buy, and like maybe BlackRock's buying on Peach, like no KYC.
Larry Fink. That's the case. Larry Fink's very poor. Just look at that.
The game theory is really playing out, though. Like, it seems like...
All right. Let's put our adversarial thinking caps on here. I know we're all bullish for the ETF. It's going to pump our bags, but...
Canada has an ETF.
Canada has an ETF for years. It's Canada. It's Canada. Sorry to all the Canadian freaks.
Raise your hand if you're from Canada. There we go.
We're blaming Canada for not pushing the ETF hard enough up there. No, but ETF approved. Many people are going to ape into that. And then I said this yesterday too, and I know it's somewhat sacrilege to some people, but Bitcoin Jesus of this cycle, Michael Saylor, was on CNBC last week. Like, the banks need to control all the custody. It's like, it seems like it could be the door opening for the adults in the room to be like, we're here now. And then the government being like, you can only deal with the adults in the room.
And they're going
to
keep saying regulatory clarity over and over again.
Yes.
Like Gemini?
Yeah, the Gemini, the most regulated cryptocurrency exchange that has over $1 billion to their customers.
Crypto needs rules.
Yeah.
Can Bitcoin take down BlackRock if they play enough games?
Yeah, if BlackRock does like an FTX paper Bitcoin thing, I really do believe, and I know it sounds like cope, and maybe it's a little bit of cope. Like, I think like all the kids that were playing paper Bitcoin games, all the suits that were playing paper Bitcoin games getting wrecked, reduce the highs of the last cycle and increase the lows of this bear cycle. But that's how Bitcoin almost like self-regulates itself from those paper games, right? Like everyone always says, or a lot of people say, like the difference with gold and Bitcoin is that, first of all, like if you want to go spend gold, you're like, what, are you gonna like chip off a bar to like buy a coffee or something? Like, it's not very practical. But also is that it's really hard to take self-custody. Like it's, and especially at scale, like it's hard for an individual to take $10 million worth of self-custody gold. And why is that important? That's important because the fact that people can stack to self-custody means that anyone, any, if you're playing paper Bitcoin games or paper gold games, you're inherently short the asset. And they get blown out eventually. Eventually, the buy pressure is too much. The withdrawal pressure is too much. And they get wrecked. And short term, that sucks for us. But long term, it means that Bitcoin is resistant to these type of games. One other thing I would add is after a Bitcoin ETF, there's a good chance we might see an Ethereum ETF or something like that.
I saw.
And it'll be really fun. I think people are going to learn the problems with proof of stake after BlackRock has the majority of fucking ETH. That's when it get like on a proof of, like the whole reason Bitcoin, one of the main reasons Bitcoin has value is because the more Bitcoin you own doesn't mean you have more control over the network. And proof of stake is completely the opposite of that.
Yeah. I mean, BlackRock filed something in Delaware today, paving the way for an ETH spot ETF.
So. Anyway, the best timeline is BlackRock plays paper Bitcoin games and just gets absolutely fucking wrecked. And then hyper Bitcoinization. Like that would be.
Could happen.
But then also mempools clear on Christmas. Does anything centralize ETH faster than an ETF?
Pre-mine. Yeah.
Was the question. And one of the freaks said a pre-mine.
You'd have to assume it's not centralized already.
Right? Yeah. It's just like, who is it centralized among? And like, how much of a regulatory target do they have on their back?
No, but keep it on this adversarial tip. I mean, over in the UK, it seems like the travel rule implementations with the trust consortium of exchanges. So trust, what's it stand for? Travel rule universal something.
ST.
Yeah, ST.
Travel rule universal ST.
Something technology. But anyway, it's a consortium of exchanges throughout the world. I think Coinbase started it, but there's a good number. I think there's like 36. They're essentially creating a protocol to be travel rule compliant with their exchanges, which is essentially making it so they can exchange user data with each other if their users are sending Bitcoin from one vast virtual asset service provider to another. But it was a bit confusing because like Gemini implemented it in the UK. I think Circle implemented it as well. And I think that's the question right now. Like there were some people posting screenshots of them being unable to send Bitcoin.
They can still send to self-custody, but it is a slippery slope and it's not, unfortunately, not surprising to see, but not great to see. I mean, I think that has been our thesis publicly for a while, which is that like freedom usage of Bitcoin will be attacked and like captured regulated usage won't be, rather than just like a straight up ban. On top of that, besides the two recent FinCEN pieces, which are horrible and incredibly vague and terrible for privacy and freedom, is also Lightspark recently added their... compliance to Lightning addresses and called them universal money addresses.
Weren't you saying you don't think there's like anything?
Well, they got their first partner. Bakkt is their first partner. So like the 12 people that use Bakkt can send between the five people that use Lightspark in a compliant manner. But that's the scary precedent. You start to see that start to roll out more and more. I mean... And I was talking to someone about this, and I'm kind of curious on your guys' opinion. So I have a theory that like, so like if you use Zeus, right, you use the embedded node in Zeus, the node is in your phone, you get a Lightning address, it's at Zeus Pay, right? And I think these compliance services at some point will say, if you're going to pay at Zeus Pay, like if the Lightning, the compliance will be as simple as, you know, if you're trying to pay an at Zeus Pay user, if Evan doesn't like submit his VASP paperwork and his regulatory compliance strategy, then they just won't even send the payment. So the regulated services will essentially block payments to non-regulated entities. And there's an opposite side of the equation where the freedom-oriented services do it first. And say, if you see an at Lightspark address or an at Bakkt address or an at Coinbase address or something, and it has the compliance string in it, you don't allow the user to pay them. Or you pop up a warning and you're like, you're sending into like a regulated compliance service and you shouldn't do that. There might be something there. I don't know if that's the right tack tactic, or if it's just better to let them block us and then claim foul. But it's an interesting thought.
No, it's funny too that, I mean, LightSpark certainly has gotten a lot of flack for this particular protocol, but I remember, I think it was last year or the year before, somebody went to the Bitcoin dev mailing list and proposed a BIP to include travel rule information like within
like on-chain right?
transactions and got
immediate. Yeah, we could use ordinals for that. We should just inscribe our social security number on the chain and then we could use that for all of our transactions.
Yeah.
I know. I hope they give Rabbit Hole Recap credit. As Odell suggested on Rabbit Hole Recap, we've added Social Security via inscriptions on chain.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. I mean, we should thank Satoshi for the aggressive supply schedule that he laid out in the protocol. Like, the thing that we do have on our side is that most Bitcoin that will ever exist has been distributed to the network, and most of those UTXOs are held in self-custody. So that is sort of the last bastion of not even the last bastion, but it is a leverage point from which to move forward. And it's making clear to people that have Bitcoin in self-custody, it's make sure you keep it within self-custodial wallets as you're transacting and stuff like that. Try to avoid sending it to these custody's products, which could be hard.
I mean, that's what like the ETF kind of does, right? It like gobbles up these UTXOs and just like kind of keeps it in BlackRock's vault forever. Cause like, I feel like the ETFs, like unless they do something really fucked up, like their total Bitcoin under custody is just going to increase over time. Right. Like it doesn't actually usually just like lines goes up to the right, but I don't really think that matters. Does it matter? Like Bitcoin's like almost infinitely divisible. Like if sats aren't small enough, we could potentially add even more decimals. Like what does it matter how many? Like even if 18 million Bitcoin were in Coinbase custody, because all the ETFs are using Coinbase custody, like would it even matter? Like couldn't we just continue the mission with 3 million?
Certainly.
Like I don't know if that's
another thing we should address, because I think we've been spreading fake news too, which is the meme that all these coins have been flowing off of exchanges, but they're flowing into Coinbase custody.
Yeah, they don't track Coinbase custody.
Yeah.
What, do you want to break that down? Like, why is that confusing for people?
Because the chain, Glassnode. I wanted to say chain now. They are chain analysis.
Yeah, chain. And the other companies are chain surveillance companies.
Yes, like OXT.me, Glassnode. They identify these exchange wallets, and people identify those and track those, and basically use that as a gauge to see how many coins are on exchanges and use that as a proxy to determine who's holding Bitcoin in self-custody and who's using a third party. And the number on the exchanges that are identified by Glassnode, OXT.me and others has been coming down, but it's becoming pretty clear that a lot of those people that are taking it off the exchange are simply sending it to cold storage at Coinbase custody. Which,
yeah, like specifically Glassnode excludes Coinbase custody.
Yes.
They consider that like not an exchange. So they don't put that in their nice, pretty chart. Yeah. And funny story on that front, actually, by the way, for the longest time, a bunch of people thought that FTX had amazing OPSEC on their exchange wallets because no one could find where the Bitcoin was. And it turned out they had none.
That's why.
Too good to be true.
I think this is the first time somebody on stage with us has just gotten up and left.
Oh, he's going to get his dog. He warned me.
This is embarrassing.
Like this whole Coinbase thing I'm getting out.
What else should we open up to? Thunder. Jesus.
That one hurt. You want to open up to questions?
Yeah, let's open it up.
You're good, Tom.
Let's give it up for Tom. Thank you, Tom.
I know you guys have avoided the news rundown today, but I'll force you back into it briefly. today we saw a pretty unbelievable outcome in the Treasury auction where the auction failed. And we saw a 5% and change increase in the interest rate as a result of that. So we're seeing this like pretty unbelievable macroeconomic thing happening in tandem with fees spiking and with Bitcoin price spiking. Is the decoupling complete?
Some nuance here, I believe, because I don't know if this was like an after effect save face by the Treasury, but did you guys see the headline that there was some ransomware that it affected some Chinese banks, which affected the Treasury auction? Who knows the validity of that claim, but it does sound like hope. That's what they're blaming it on. They said there was a ransomware attack in China that affected the Treasury auction.
Convenient.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's something to be said about, I mean, it's almost, it's meme worthy, right? Like this idea of not only lending money to the US government, but treating that as risk-free, which is fucking insane. They're like the worst lending counterparty you can provide to. They're in massive amounts of debt. They're never going to pay it off. And like, it does a flip switch at some point where people are like, no, I'm not going to buy it.
We're going to take your money and fund gender studies in Pakistan. Is that a good return? No. Like, we're going to take your money and fund unreliable energy infrastructure that will never return the capital you gave me. Like, no, it is. I wrote a newsletter about this like 2 months ago. They're the most deadbeat debt counterparty in the world.
I'm like left curve Bitcoiner in terms of anything government finance Fed shit. I had like a cursed tweet where I was like, just don't pay attention to the Fed. It doesn't matter what the fuck they do. And they just kept raising rates. And like, it did matter to a degree, at least in the short term. But I do think that like it seems to me like it's a dangerous game where it's like, even if the Fed tries to lower rates and pivot back down, that treasuries don't follow. Because there's no like hard and fast rule that treasuries follow what the Federal Reserve does. Like ultimately the market determines how risky it is to lend money to the US government. And like, so you could get into a situation where they try and pivot and they actually can't get their debt down in terms of interest payments.
No, I mean, that's a big misconception out there. When the Fed is manipulating rates, they're manipulating the federal funds rate, which is the rate at which banks trade their reserves overnight. And a lot of people who don't understand the intricacies of Fed policy think it's directly correlated to treasuries, which, yeah, that rate is driven by market demand and supply.
But like historically, it has been to a degree, but that's not a hard and fast rule. Like that's just a coincidence. I don't know. Not a coincidence. It's like the turkey day thing, right? It's like a turkey's life, a life in a turkey where it's just like they get older and older and older and then they're just straight dead to zero.
Thanksgiving's next week.
Yeah.
You're dead.
Dude, Thanksgiving's gonna be lit if we have all the ETFs.
This is gonna be the best Thanksgiving in a while.
No, there's been a lot of sad Thanksgivings, that's for sure.
There's been a lot of Thanksgivings where my father-in-law has looked at me like, who the fuck did my daughter marry? Not this year, Michael.
So, but I was going to say, sticking on the treasuries, one thing that I feel like is like a common misconception is that, like Matt, you said it, like one day people are like, oh, I'm just going to not lend money to the US government. And the thing is that like, let's just pretend that the economy is a machine. The economy is like a dollar-based machine. And like the fuel is treasuries. So like, I don't think that we're going to stop like quote unquote needing treasuries until we're moving off that system altogether.
But the rates go up.
Sure, yeah. Rates go up. The market will drive that. I agree with that completely. But, you know, it's just like there is a driver for demand for treasuries. And that's like just the Lindy of how this existing system works.
But if treasury rates go up, it turns into this vicious cycle, right? Like the treasury rates are going up. Our interest expense goes up on the existing debt we have. You start to lose control over it. And then they continue to go up because you're a worse counterparty in that situation. And then they continue to go up. And then next thing you know, you're just absolutely fucked. And then Bitcoin standard
spiraling. No, and another interesting thing too to note, which was announced earlier this year, Janet Yellen announced, is that they're reopening the buyback window for treasuries for the first time since 2001 next year. So it seems like if you read between the lines what that announcement means, the Treasury even understands that, I think particularly post freezing of Russia's Treasury assets, they realize like, oh fuck, we fucked up. Like, there may not be as much demand as we think. And there's a lot of rollover of treasuries that's happening next year.
Yeah, they just straight up rugged Russia's treasuries.
Yeah.
Like, imagine being any other owner of treasuries and just seeing that happen just like instantly. Boom.
We were talking about it earlier today. It could happen to Tether.
It could easily happen to Tether.
Yeah.
But they're stacking coins, so. They have a lot of Bitcoin.
But not nearly enough to cover the reserves.
Yeah, it's like 5% of the reserves, yeah. I think.
Okay, next question.
I got a question about the Fed too. So not so humble brag. I was in Japan and missed the news cycle, but did you guys talk about why the Fed is so pissed off at Bitcoin Magazine?
Wait, can you stand up and just show Marty your shirt?
Yeah, I was inspired last night. So, shout out to us.
Shout out to you, sir.
Shout out to us.
We got a ride or die freak with a shout out to us shirt in the audience.
Another signal, the Fed triggered. Christian, I'll
should
you take
this one?
Yeah.
So I guess while I was at Bitcoin Magazine, we produced a line of shirts that just Fed Now, but with an I in the O. And I guess at some point, someone at the Fed in Chicago noticed, and then a lawyer wrote a cease and desist letter to Bitcoin Magazine threatening to sue. The funny thing is that they didn't even have like a apparel copyright on Fed Now, so Bitcoin Magazine immediately filed for the copyright, which is hilarious. But that's it. Just pretty much like they're not sending us their best. You know, some lawyer was like, oh, like that's our name, like, you know, cease and desist, and without like really thinking about it. So of course they turned that into a massive press opportunity.
Yeah, you think somebody at the Chicago Fed would have been like, have you guys ever heard of the Streisand effect? Like, that's exactly what happened.
That's we're over the target.
No, it's another signal that we're triggering them.
But no, more importantly, though, I think is that I think it was an attempt to silence speech. Like, it's you know, Bitcoin Magazine, particularly the print issue, is just like, it's like a massive book that gets released quarterly that just shits on the Fed. And like they can't stop them from doing that, but they can go after the merch, right? And I think it's important for us to highlight that it is a fucked up move on their part, even if they
failed
their execution.
Yeah, and then it highlights like the Fed is technically a private institution. Like,
isn't it weird that like all these banks have to use Fed Now, but they have a copyright for it theoretically? And it's just like, what is the Fed? Like, how is this like a part of this system? It's just weird.
I mean, it kind of makes sense to have a copyright on CBDC. I feel like it's aligned.
I mean, so like a public entity, but it's not a public entity. Yeah. So it's just like, what is this thing? Is it a corporation? Is it a public entity? Like,
no, yeah, that's
don't
true.
Don't the American people own Fed Now? Like, you know, just like, what is happening?
Well, that's what people think. They don't. It's a private institution. The board members of the Fed own it, which is made up of the commercial banks and a few others. But it gets to another point with many signals, whether it's Janet Yellen opening the buyback window next year, the Fed getting triggered and suing, Bitcoin Magazine. Christine Lagarde came out 2 weeks ago, said the digital euro is in the preparation phase. And then another thing that was in the news this week, Augustin Karstens, the fat big boss from the Bank of International Settlements, came out and said, like, the future of money is going to be a CBDC. Like, it is a foregone conclusion in his mind. So that all signals to me that they're getting very nervous, very desperate, and they're accelerating this push towards the digitalization of their currencies.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, HRF, we already announced this. Next week, we are announcing our CBDC tracker, and we're unveiling it in DC to a bunch of policymakers. But I was previewing the research, and it is insane the percentage of countries globally that are investigating CBDCs. Like, it's close to 70-80%. Like, it is really, really wild.
How can we look? Where? How do we find the CBDC tracker? Is it like
next Tuesday?
C.B.D.
Yes, yes, that's exactly it. No, but it's gonna be CBDC.hrf.org.
That's nice. Very clean.
CK, to your earlier point, though, they're not sending their best. Like Nigeria tried to roll out the CBDC and it failed miserably within months. So even though this stuff is extremely unnerving, there is that bullish part of me where it's like, these people are so fucking dumb. Like they're going to try it and they're going to fail miserably.
Marty's going to use Elon CBDC, though.
Bet.
We'll see.
Bet. Let's double or nothing the...
He's trying to save himself.
The mempool bet.
No, we can do a separate bet.
No, we're double or nothing.
Okay, yeah, fine. So what, you're going to owe me...
Timeline.
No, we're not going to double or nothing because I'm going to win this bet. So that doesn't make any sense. So just 200,000 sats.
Okay.
You're gonna be fully in the Elon ecosystem. I don't know. How do we measure that? Are you gonna send a single payment in Twitter wallet? If you send a single payment in X wallet, then you lose. And you have to be honest about it because I'm not gonna like hack your account to figure out if you did or not.
We'll figure it out. It hasn't even been rolled out yet. If it's rolled out, we'll make the bet.
I think you're gonna pay for the TFTC blue check with the ex CBDC.
No, TFTC blue check.
And you're gonna go, but like, oh, actually it's not a CBDC, like it's a private company. It's Elon surveilling and controlling me, not directly the US government. It's like one hand removed.
TFTC. we're starting our own CBDC at TFTC.
It's called SATS.
Yeah.
Imagine all these basically private entities becoming mints and then offering their tokens. But we've had tokens for a long time. We've had a bunch of Fedi mints for a long time. We've had cashew mints for a long time. Then all of a sudden it feels like they're just like the latest kid on the block. And then are you gonna, you know, you might have entities you trust a lot more than the certain small governments or whatever. So you're like,
I mean, Elon's,
you might have
not
a wallet
gonna,
that have multiple of them. And
Elon's not gonna use a Changmin eCash mint.
No.
It's gonna be like full KYC dollars.
But if you have a wallet and it has like all these options and whatnot, it might feel like.
I don't know. I think the CBDC, like the pump chest CBDC, like no one's ever gonna use a thing, is just a complete crock of shit. Like people just do things out of convenience and they do the most convenient thing and people are gonna do it. And I think we should operate under the expectation that most people will. And so that we're not like completely broken when that happens.
Well, maybe it proves to be an anomaly in the CBDC rollout, but I think Nigeria proved that it's not convenient because you have to trade in your dollars and then do all that math or your Naira in the case of Nigeria.
I think Nigeria was just like a learning experience for authoritarians. And they'll figure it out.
I could see that being the case. But yeah, like when you think about like the actual mechanics of transitioning to a CBDC, it's not going to be clean. It's not going to be convenient. There's a bunch of people with a bunch of cash under the mattresses, and the government's not just going to say your cash is worthless. I mean, there's you could turn it in for your CBDC.
I mean, they've done that.
There's a bunch of blue checks that have fully KYC'd with Twitter, set up a Stripe account, KYC'd with Stripe, linked the two of them so that they can make their ad revenue.
But
CBDC would be way more convenient.
It goes back
that.
To the physical cash stock, though. And Maxim is anxious on some great... research on this, like the stock of physical cash globally is growing at a 13% compounded annual growth rate. Like the physical cash is not going away at all. And that's going to be the biggest holdup for actually transitioning to a CBDC.
Do you think the commercial bank lobby would also be a big holdup to that? Because their interests would be really damaged by that?
Yes.
It seems like they would fight that harder than individuals.
Sean doesn't have a mic, so he asked if the commercial bank lobby would also be resistant to it.
That's one of the theories. But another theory is like FedNow being somewhat of a roundabout way to placate the commercial banks. We're like, hey, you have this white label service. We'll cut you in on the deal.
Yeah, but this is all, you know, whatever. Like, this is the well actually is not a CBDC argument that we're going to hear from fucking everybody.
Exactly.
I don't give a shit if it's not directly controlled by the central bank. Like, everyone will be using most people will be using surveilled, censored, controlled, tracked money. That's what people will be using. It might not be directly from the central bank. Everyone will get their little piece. and get some money from it. But I don't want to hear like the well actually, like it's a private company. It's not a CBDC.
I just said exactly what you said. Yeah. Like they're just going to placate them with this white label CBDC and be like, we'll cut you in.
Yeah.
Well, what's the difference with what you described and what we have right now?
Exactly.
Nothing.
Well, yeah. So what's the point of a CBDC? I'm on the point. I'm on the track of CBDCs won't happen. I think the governments are incompetent. You know, they just can't ship tech.
I think because like it's the current digital payments landscape is like taped together and it's like all duct taped together and doesn't really like people.
So you're saying that like, the Fed is going to build a better one?
No, like I think
these bureaucrats.
No,
going to build a better
system.
That's
why I think Elon's a bigger threat, right? Because I think it comes out of the private sector and I think it saves them a lot of money and it works better on their end and it's like more efficient on their end. It's easier to track and it's easier to control and it's easier to surveil and that there's just a use case there. And ironically enough, like we see it in the Bitcoin circles too. Like UMA is almost an attempt at doing something like that. And just because it uses Bitcoin on the transit layer doesn't mean it's any less dangerous than a CBDC because on every end, they're doing what the goals of a CBDC would be.
Yeah, and you're getting into a really important point that people really need to internalize, which is like at the end of the day, like you said, CK, like what's the difference from today? It's really a philosophical difference. Like what do the government or private enterprise, like what should they be able to control? Like this data transfer, like it really doesn't matter about the mechanics of how it happens, whether it's over FedNow or X.com or Bitcoin. Like it's the philosophy of including that data in every transaction and using that against people. And that maybe that's where people are getting confused and the whole conversation gets muddied and maybe we get sent down a completely wrong path of discussion where it's like more of a philosophical than mechanical discussion.
No, I agree. CK, do you have another announcement from HRF, right?
Yeah, I do. Thanks for remembering. Marty, I think you nailed that, though, because I think people get caught up in the semantics when the reality is that like they're gripping down. And
like, what's
down.
The end goal?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, in practice.
Yep. So HRF talking about, you know, what monitoring surveillance and monitoring the restrictions on freedom. We also want to monitor and tell the stories of freedom and freedom in Bitcoin. I think like one of the best things that Gladstein has done over the past 3 or 4 years is just simply like unveil stories and like tell stories from Cuba, from Palestine, from Russia to Ukraine to the history of the CFA franc. So we're trying to take that to the next level at HRF. So we are going to be rolling out a newsletter that is focused only on Bitcoin and human freedom and talking about either individual stories or listing out the news of the week. We hope to do this every single week and create a resource because, you know, Bitcoiners, as we try to orange pill people, as we try to, you know, have a very serious face about why we care about Bitcoin, we need to be fueled with these narratives that kind of back up our point. And I think there's nothing more ironclad or bulletproof than the very clear examples of Bitcoin actually helping the people who need it the most. And that's what we want to be able to supply in the newsletter. So that's dropping next week. We're going to be announcing it. So y'all got some alpha here on the show, exclusive for RHR. But hopefully we can give you guys some of the bullet points that you cover on the show every week.
Fuck yeah. How do we subscribe to that?
Yeah. So you can subscribe to that by hitting me up here in Bitcoin Park and I'll add you to the list. Next week when we announce it, it will be easy to subscribe.
If you need any like shilling advice, like I'm happy.
Well, so hey, this is the early, you know, again, this is not even being announced publicly until next week, except when the show comes out tomorrow.
Okay.
But the official announcement is going to be happening online next week with all the gadgets. But you can come here if you are interested and I'll add your email to the list.
Well, we appreciate the tease on the effort.
Well, on that note too, like highlighting Bitcoin via free market mechanism, like helping people. That are associated with, not even associated with the Human Rights Foundation, but just helping people globally. Like we had a great example of that this week. Like Mr. Beast went, like I'm not the biggest Mr. Beast fan.
I don't know who Mr. Beast is and I'm too afraid to ask.
It's pretty awesome.
I've never watched one of his videos, but he's a big YouTuber. But no, it's an example of the free market.
He's a Bitcoiner.
He's a Bitcoiner.
Is he really?
Yeah. But yeah, like literally UN, Bill Gates, all these supranational like government entities have been trying to help Africa for like over 100 years. And a YouTuber shows up in a week and produces 100 water wells that have never existed before. It's a great example of the free market. Just some dude who was like, you know what? I'm going to go over and drill some wells for these people.
I obviously saw the wells news because it was all over the place. But like, who was he before he made the wells? Like, what is his? What kind of content does he make? Does he just go around giving people
it's
money
for kids.
And stuff?
He's like the biggest YouTuber in the world.
Yeah.
But what does he? What does he do to be?
Just does crazy stuff.
Like, what does a usual show entail?
He did a show about how he gave people back their sight, and he helped like people with specific like vision impairments.
So
that
he's
could
usually
be
good doing good things.
Yeah. It's random stuff, but like he'll do like these stunts. He'll do like these stunts. Yeah. Like he'll build 100 wells.
Yeah, the wells in the eye. Guys are like to make up for like the pranks that he did in the past.
Got it.
Matt, one is everybody puts their hand on a car. The last person to take their hand off the car gets $100,000.
Yeah.
That films the video. And that's the video.
But are they like disadvantaged people?
Nope.
No, it's his buddies.
Random people. And he films the whole thing and cuts it together. And they have their hand on the car for 50 hours and they like urinate themselves. It's relatively exploitative.
But he pays them out in Bitcoin.
No. I'm pretty sure he's the reason for soy face thumbnails too. And
oof. He's like an amazing YouTube marketer, so if he really isn't Bitcoin, like it's bad.
The point being, we don't have to dig into his individual content. He provided a great example of the free market solving problems this week.
I mean, you're the one, it's the Marty Bent endorsement, right?
If we were to strip it away and just look at it, at the data, and not apply Mr. Beast's name to us, it was a free market actor solving a problem.
Fair enough.
That the government's been pretending to solve for like 100 years.
We have time for one more question, and then we're going to do final thoughts. Tom, you want to pick someone and give them a mic? I shirked my personal responsibility of choosing.
I didn't really have a question, so I just had a comment. You're talking about... you guys were talking about... Are we in the bull market? Is this a trap or whatever? I think it's cool to note that... if you remember in 2020, when the price like finally hit 10K again, and we were like, holy shit, it's 10K again, and it like stayed over 10K, and it's been over 10K since. And that mark was like... the halfway to the previous all-time high of 20K. Well, that's what 35K is.
You're bullish, right, Mandrick?
I'm bullish as fuck at 35K. Before that, I was like, yeah, whatever. But once we hit 35K, I'm in. That's it.
I stand with Mandrick.
So, I mean...
Is this somebody who might have the most pattern recognition in the room now?
Look, I read the tea leaves, all right? So trust me, buy fucking Bitcoin, all right? Actually, even better, earn fucking Bitcoin. Don't buy it. Unless you're buying it without KYC.
To those that are not aware, Mandrick is known for, what, like 12 years ago, you were cleaning toilets for Bitcoin?
This week, pretty much.
12 years ago this week, he was cleaning toilets for Bitcoin. Talk about a great return. Best trade ever.
I started the toilets like a couple months later.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we got room for one more question,
story.
Tom.
Yeah, that wasn't really a question. He was just like, I'm bullish as fuck. If anyone wants to tell us they're bullish, Tom will get you the mic.
I'll try to phrase this as a question rather than a statement too. I agree with what you were saying, Christian, about the government kind of sucks at rolling out technology, but isn't this a more existential problem for them to really have an extra incentive to get this right? So like we can all be hopeful, I think, that that they don't succeed with the CBDC, but we should be preparing as if they're going to, right? Like. Yeah. I think it's really important to them more than most other tech projects are.
I mean, yeah, always prepare for the worst, hope for the best. But again, like, I don't think they're competent enough. Like, it came out this week, too. Like, the SEC won't hire people that hold Bitcoin. And so they literally can't find the talent who actually knows what they're doing in the space.
Every SEC employee is short Bitcoin. How fucking awesome is that? Pump that right in my veins.
So, I mean, that must explain Gensler, right? He must have been a Bitcoiner, took the job, had to dump his bags, and salty ever since.
Dude, they're not even, like, we haven't even barely saw the salt yet. Like, this next cycle, the suits are going to get so fucking mad.
I don't know.
It's going to be insane.
I remember wrote a newsletter about it last week, but these people.
Which people, Marty?
The people.
The blue checks?
the blue checks. But no, like the people, the BIS, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, like they're so out of touch. I mean, I don't want to be an ageist here, but like they're old. They don't understand what's going on. And they're truly driven by whether they realize it or not, nefarious sort of intentions to control others. And I do think, considering how far we've come in the digital age and social media is a double-edged sword, thank God we have things like Noster, but I do think more and more people are getting good information and are being able, and I know Matt's going to be like, I said, bullish on humanity in 2019, but I do think people learned a lot of lessons.
I have a new black pill.
What's that?
Like, we just drive around with cars that have like KYC information just plastered on the front.
Well, this is why we need to get the new Toyotas in the US.
I mean, you're still going to have to put your little KYC plate on the front. That's always been the case. Yeah.
We're getting into the history of license plates now.
Well, I mean, their passports are a good example of like temporary government, whatever, but with license plates, it's kind of interesting because they mandated it slowly over time. It got very normalized, but it didn't get really draconian until the last 10 years. Like now they just have license plate scanners everywhere. So it's like, if you're not getting tracked on your phone, you're not getting tracked on your Apple Watch, you're not getting tracked on your car that's connected to the internet, that license plate reader that catches you going on right on Main Street over there is watching everywhere you go. And it's all being shared by private companies to each other, leaked around, shared to governments. Like there's an interesting lesson there on how freedom dies slowly in a pot.
We all need to revert to bikes.
Just a little civil disobedience. Ride your bike.
No, but in New York, you can't even get into the city on some bridges without Easy Pass or just letting them send
a lot of them check. Are now pay by plate.
Yeah, pay by plate. Well, the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, what was the point
to
you're
answer
to make?
The question is like, I don't know. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but I do think we're at a critical inflection point where, yes, the government has a lot of power. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of guns.
The guns thing is...
They're able to instill fear in people, but I do think they just are not equipped to...
Was like there's like 800,000 U.S. police officers and 300 million civilian guns?
400 million.
Well, there's all the no KYC guns.
Yeah. No, I don't think they're equipped. And I think, again, like people who have found Bitcoin, people who have found Noster, people who understand what's going on. I do think there is a critical mass of extremely smart, savvy, technical people that can solve these problems and are becoming more impassioned to solve these problems and actually following up that passion with work that is producing tools like Bitcoin and the software stack that's being built on top of it and like Noster. I think we've got the foundations for building the tools to get away from that control that the government would like to put on us. The next step that we need is just to instill confidence in more people, the silent majority that agrees that things are fucked up. They've gone along with the narrative for a certain amount of time. They just need like a push over the edge. Like, hey, come stack sats, come build Noster, come build the tools that allow you to unlock the shackles that these governments want to throw on you.
And now's the perfect time for the announcement.
Which one?
Marty's only going to post on Noster from now on.
It's not true. It's fake news.
Little civil disobedience, bro.
Thunder Biscuit, any final thoughts?
This was fantastic. It was like sitting in the middle of like two best friends just going back and forth for an hour.
We appreciate you.
I love it.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for Petawan Wallet.
Thank you for BDK.
Yeah, you're welcome. And hey, final thoughts. I just released a website yesterday called opcodeexplained.com. Check it out. If you're a developer, you're interested in educating yourself about the next soft forks that are coming up. And,
opcodeexplained.com.
Opcodeexplained.com.
If we could only get one more opcode, what would it be?
That's exactly why I was a perfect person to write this website, because I wasn't sure. And my opcode game was not good enough to really get in the trenches with the guys that are like, if you combine this opcode and this other opcode, then you get this third one for free and all that stuff. And I wasn't like completely clear because my daily job doesn't, I don't like write bespoke Bitcoin script. So I built this website for people like me.
So after building the website, which opcode would you want if you could pick one?
Let's start with OpCTV or something like that. I like OpVault, that sort of stuff. I think custody is a big thing.
Do you think we're going to get CTV?
I think so, yeah.
By the halving?
Some form of covenant.
No, definitely not by the halving, right? Like 2 years or something?
Yeah, it'll be a while. That's my guess.
I hope it's a while. I like CTV. I like Jeremy. I like all that. But I think humans are just learning how to Bitcoin. So like we don't need to mess with Bitcoin too much. That's my general heuristic. But hey, I'm not a developer. So I just think, you know, time is good. Time is good.
I think my thought is like, I think, you know, if Bitcoin never evolved anymore and just never merged anything else ever, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But I do think it'd be the end of Bitcoin. So,
I mean, I didn't say never merge anything. I just saying, you know, time is good.
No, I know.
Time is good.
Wait, why would it be the end of Bitcoin?
I think it'd be the end of the Bitcoin we want, the Bitcoin we, the spiritual Bitcoin we envision for ourselves and we think of. I think it's important to differentiate between what we think of it and those ideals that we have for it and the code that embodies those ideals. And those are not at the same, they're not identical right now, or they're not, they don't match one for one. So if you want to, if you want those ideals to eventually work, then that implies Bitcoin's a software project. And so that means it needs to evolve and continue to, it's a living code base.
Something this reminds me of, Matt, I don't know if you even know this, but we have a YouTube troll that literally every episode we post on YouTube, the first comment is, Matt Odell won't admit that it would take 50 years for every human on the earth to open up a Lightning channel.
But just specifically me?
Yes.
But you'd admit it?
What?
You would admit it, but I wouldn't.
He calls you out specifically.
Me specifically.
Yeah.
Guys, never read the YouTube comments.
Big Lightning hater. Not every human will be able to own a UTXO either with the current implementation. So
yeah, but certain things can be done.
Agreed.
Like on app layer, and I don't know. I'm not so like we definitely need like maintenance releases and stuff like that. And if there's any critical bugs definitely need to be fixed.
Reminder: there is a critical bug that needs to be fixed that dictates that there will be a hard fork at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I also have a weird hard fork. Like I said, I could go for like an hour on this topic alone, but I have like a weird hard fork belief after 2017, which isn't that like hard forks are impossible. It's just like it actually has to be for something.
Like the Unix.
That the majority of people, and you can't measure it until after the fork and see which one wins, but that the majority of people want, that there's actually real overwhelming demand for something, that it can be hard forked in and that the market figures it out afterwards.
Yeah, with the Unix.
Because like 2017 Bcash was like, they were incompetent developers. They didn't have a competent strategy. There was really no support for it in terms of like stakeholder support, Bitcoin user support. So it naturally failed. But it could be a completely different scenario if you had, you know, competent developers with something like really compelling that the market demanded, then you'd have a whole different scenario.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. It's not going to be exactly like 2017, but we do need a hard fork for the Unix timestamping bug.
Yeah, but that's like an easy one.
Yeah. You could put it in a version, like you put in the next version just as a flag day. Like we need a hard fork now.
So what is that, like 2100 or something?
It's called the 2064 bug, 2038 bug, but it won't affect Bitcoin to like 2106.
So our children will handle that shit.
Yeah, that's we're going to dive into like a deep rabbit hole if we get into this. It's better to fix it earlier so that.
Yeah, but if we don't fix it earlier, we don't have to deal with it. They can deal with it.
This is why we need Bitcoin in the first place, because people are like, we don't have to worry about it. Our kids will worry about it. Debt is only money we owe ourselves.
CK, final thoughts.
It's not even on. Final thoughts. I'm a broken record. No one's bullish enough. If you think you're bullish enough, you're not humble enough. Keep stacking stats and just get more bullish.
Thanks, CK. I just want to thank everyone for coming out and joining us for this live rabbit hole recap, but also coming for Nosterville. is awesome. Would not be possible without you guys spending your time with us. Time is the only thing more scarce than Bitcoin, so it really does mean a lot, and it's just empowering getting to talk to you guys in person. Tomorrow we have content as well. But tonight, Rockstar has a after party that he's been coordinating at Acme Feed and Seed. Rockstar, I believe that starts at 7:30. Is doors open over there? Is he not in the room?
Is that he left? He's at the party already.
He's Rockstar's already there, so if you get there early, it's Acme Feed and Seed. The rooftop is reserved. But I'll pass on to Marty. Everyone should stay humble and stack sats.
Thank you guys for coming. Thank you for doing what you do. Showing up is important. And again, like I said earlier, like we just need that critical mass of the silent majority that knows things are wrong to be instilled with confidence that, hey, you can fix your problems. You don't need the government. And I think events like Nosterville and all the events you guys throw at the park really do help to push that confidence spreading into beat space, which is very important. So Matt, Harry, Rod, thank you guys for everything. And I have to fly home tonight. I'm going to miss the party, but have fun. Peace and love.